Good afternoon and welcome. This is John Reuter with WR Squared Advisors for our third Thursday conference call. This is the first, obviously, of the new decade in 2020. Our guest speaker today is Dave Lafferty, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Strategist for the Texas Investment Managers. Dave is responsible for assessing economic and capital market trends and their implication for investment portfolios. He's been with Natexis since 2004. Previously, he was a senior vice president responsible for fixed income and asset allocation products at State Street Research and Management. From 1998 to 2001, he was a senior vice president and strategist for MetLife. And prior to joining MetLife, he served on the board of directors of Caspian Capital Management and Caspian Private Equity, a New York-based hedge fund and private equity firm. Mr. Lafferty is a frequent speaker on TV and in industry events and is often quoted in Barron's, Bloomberg, The Wall Street Journal, and other financial publications. He holds a Bachelor's of Economics and Political Science from the University of New Hampshire and a Master of Science in Finance at Suffolk University. He's a CFA charter holder and a member of the CFA Society of Boston, the CFA Institute, and the National Association for Business and Economics, and has over 25 years of investment experience. Dave, thank you very much. Welcome. Thank you for being our guest speaker for our start of 2020. And looking forward to hearing what your comments are going to be. So I'll just set the table and just ask if you can maybe give us a little bit of a perspective and maybe a summary of what went on in 2019, and then maybe touch on some thoughts that you have going into 2020. And somewhere along the line, if you maybe touch on trade, particularly what's going on in China and some of the recent events. This is an election year, so no real political content, but maybe some comments of what you think might happen there. And then, again, without any kind of a deep political, discussion, but maybe what implications, if any, from the current events with the impeachment trials and so on and so forth. So with that, I will stop talking and look forward to having your comments, Dave. Thank you very much.
Great. Hopefully you guys can hear me. Does this sound good?
Sound is excellent. Thank you.
Great. Perfect. Well, let me start by saying, thank you to the team, John and Craig and Chad, for having me. We always appreciate the chance to get on the line and talk to clients and kind of put our views out there. So the agenda you laid out is great. That's where I was going to go. I'll talk about last year. I'll talk a little bit about the global economy, markets, and then a few of those topics. So last year was a fascinating year. You actually have to go a little bit further back than last year to understand kind of how the year was starting in late 2018. Remember, we had this near bear market. We were down 19.8% in U.S. stocks, the S&P 500 in the fourth quarter of 2018. And that really set the stage when I think what really changed the landscape was the Federal Reserve, which was beginning and had been tightening monetary conditions. People began to worry very much about the yield curve and about U.S. growth slowing, and the Fed really changed their tune at the December meeting of 2018, and that really set the markets up for a really strong rally early in the year in 2019. You may remember it started with the Christmas Eve bottom, but basically – from the Christmas Eve bottom till about the end of May, the market was up really, really strong, mostly because the Fed kind of changed their tune. They were taking the punch bowl away, then they began adding liquidity and suppressing interest rates again, lowering the interest rate, ultimately through, I think, the July meeting by about 75 basis points. So the market flatlines a little bit in the middle of the year, takes a breather. Everyone's worried about trade and tariffs. It appears we're going to have a phase one trade deal. This gets announced in early October. And again, the market loves it, and the market rallies really strong through the end of the year. So we end up having sort of a three phases, to 2019. Kind of the market was down a lot at the end of 18, so we got a nice rally when the Fed changed. We planed off and didn't do much for about half the year. And then the last 2.5 months, really strong. And that's continued into this year. And I think that's really kind of looking back, the story of last year was the Fed thought they could keep raising interest rates, but very late in 18, early in 2019, they realized the economy just wasn't strong enough to handle that, and they really backed off, and the market really liked it. Keep in mind, the fundamentals were okay last year, but they weren't great. Earnings for 2019 are going to turn out to be very, very flat. They're basically going to turn out to be a tiny bit negative for the underlying earnings of something like the S&P 500. So keep in the back of your mind that we had a really strong market last year, and that was true on both stocks and bonds because interest rates went down. So bonds did well when stocks were doing well. But the fundamentals were okay. They weren't great by any stretch of the imagination. So the market really ran ahead of the fundamentals, I would argue. And that sets us up for this year. So where is growth look like it's going to be this year? And I'll cover a couple of regions, but I'll spend most of the time on the U.S., you know, obviously the largest economy in the world. It looks like growth is really in kind of a static phase. This year, depending upon how the fourth quarter turns out, and we won't get fourth quarter GDP for another week to 10 days, the full year for 2019, real GDP growth is going to be somewhere probably around 2.2 to 2.3. Again, we kind of know the numbers for the first three quarters. We're just waiting for that final number to come in for the fourth quarter. But given where the estimates are, that number for the year is growing at about 2.2, 2.3. So keep that number in the back of your head. We're growing around 2%, maybe a little bit more than 2%. Now, people have become a little bit more pessimistic. Economists, frankly, have become a bit more pessimistic. And the consensus estimate for this year for U.S. growth is around 1.8, maybe 1.9. So still around 2%, but slightly weaker than it was last year, but I would argue not materially weaker. And I would argue that maybe there's some hope that it might be a little bit stronger, but not a lot stronger. Unemployment is fairly low, 3.5%, as low as it's been in 50 years. Might go a little bit lower. It might not. Job growth is still pretty solid. And wage gains are not great, but they're a little bit higher than the inflation rate. And if you want to put numbers on that, wage growth in the U.S. for the average worker over the last year has been right around 3%, technically 2.9, but let's call it 3. Inflation, as the economists measure, clients on the phone may think it's a little higher, but as the economists measure it, it's around 2%, maybe a touch over 2%. So real wage gains are about 1%. Wages are going up 3% in nominal terms. Prices are going up about 2%. So your real wages are going up, but not that much. That's a decent environment for the U.S. consumer, and the U.S. consumer makes up almost 70% of U.S. GDP. So the consumer is not great, but they're pretty solid, and that makes us hopeful that the U.S. economy will do reasonably well. Won't do great. We don't see a giant upside to the economy. But we've become a little bit less worried about recession in the last 3 or 4 months. I would have said, told you 6 months ago, recession was maybe not probable, but certainly should be on people's radar screen. There's always a chance of recession, but it seems a little bit less today. Again, growth is holding up solid, but not spectacular. Most importantly, central banks are still at your back, both the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, and a bank that's becoming more and more important every year as growth improves is the People's Bank of China. And all four of those major central banks are either on hold or adding more stimulus. So I don't think they're going to make the global economic growth shoot up, but it does help to put in a little bit of a floor, at least in the near term. So big picture on the global economy, looks okay, doesn't look great, it's not growing gangbusters, but it's probably growing right around where it grew last year. a solid pace, but not spectacular. So then we get to the markets. You know, what we always want to have growth as kind of an environment around what's happening in our stock and bond portfolios. You know, in most cases, more growth is better, less growth, recession, bad, generally speaking. So the macro environment is okay, but what's going on in the stock and bond market? The stock market, as I noted, has had a really good run, and it's had a really good run in the last year without a lot of earnings, which means the market has become pretty expensive, the equity market, that is. It's not extremely expensive. It's not exorbitant. It's not kind of run to cash, run for the hills. It's just a little expensive, and there's a million different ways to measure this, but if you were to take kind of a mosaic of all these different ways, some of the key numbers we look at are probably what I would describe as 80th to 85th percentile, meaning stocks are more expensive than this about 15 to 20% of the time. They're less expensive about 80 or 85% of the time. So it's not all-time expensive. We're not running around with our hair on fire, you know, screaming, get out of the market, get out of the market. But it gives us some caution that the market just isn't very cheap right now. The same is true in the credit market. So things you may have in your portfolio, investment-grade bonds, different types of municipal bonds, high-yield bonds, these things we call bank loans, which are a little bit like high yield, but they have a floating rate notion. These things are all a bit expensive. They're not extraordinarily expensive, but they're a bit on the expensive side. So those are the risky things you'll see in your portfolios, kind of the global equity markets and kind of the credit part of the bond market. I should stop there and remind folks, the high quality parts of your bond market will probably do okay, but they're not paying a lot of yield. Remember, interest rates still very low. That's that backdrop that I was describing before, very accommodative central bank. So, you know, I don't expect interest rates to move dramatically higher or lower. You sort of get what you get in your high quality portfolios, your high quality bonds, 1, 2, 3%, depending upon, you know, your duration. But in the riskier parts of your portfolio, I still see gains. I just don't see very big gains. And again, I worry that the risk-return trade-off is not that great. So while I think the stock market will continue to kind of grind higher the way it has been, I don't see as much upside as we've seen in the last year. And that's that. If you talk to most people, they'll tell you that. We got paid a lot last year. We'll probably get paid a little bit this year, but not nearly as much. Valuations just aren't in a position where you can expect tons of upside. So what does this really mean for risk positioning? And I want to be very careful here because our firm doesn't give recommendations. We don't know the client's circumstances. That's really John and Craig and Chad's job. They know your personal circumstances. So I'll just describe very broadly kind of our insight, but we don't make recommendations because every client is a bit different. My overall view is that investors should be in markets. We're not telling people to run to cash. Simply speaking, the global economy is strong enough to support gains, and central banks are accommodative enough to keep the markets reasonably well lubricated. However, you are not getting paid well enough to stick your neck out. Now is not the time to decide, in my view, hey, market's been doing great. I got to jump in. I don't want to miss, you know, what's left of this rally. So I think people should be in markets, but maybe a bit cautious. I don't like to say conservative. That has a lot of meanings. And every client's portfolio is different, and every client's risk tolerance is different. So you really have to have a conversation, you know, with your team here on the phone. I'm not the expert on that. But I think you want to be kind of middle of the road, to maybe just a tad on the cautious side. But it's too soon to get out, and it's too late to kind of jump in with both feet and try to catch that rally. Remember, the stock market, the S&P 500, just in price terms, since the bottom at the great financial crisis, is up almost 400%. That doesn't even include your dividend. 389% just in terms of price. It's probably closer to 450 or 500 if you included compounded dividends. You know, that's a, just in price terms, that's almost a 16% annualized return. That's a really good return. Investors, if you've been in the market, you've participated, you've been happy, now is not the time to stick your neck out and try to go for broke. Not that I'm suggesting anybody's doing that, but, you know, sort of hang in there, but not the time to stick your neck out. That's kind of my view on the market. And then I'll finish with a couple of topics, because these topics are going to be the volatility around what's happening in your portfolio. And I'll mention trade first. I mentioned that growth is looks okay. We actually think maybe it'll be a tiny bit better than the expectation. Again, the market is around 1.8. We're probably closer to 2, maybe 2.1, 2.2, something like that. Maybe this phase one trade deal, while I don't put a lot of stock in it, at the margin keeps things from getting worse. Again, it puts the U.S. and China on a bit friendlier terms, but we are not going to get along with the Chinese anytime soon. Basically, what this phase one trade deal has done is both the U.S. and China were finding the sharpest sticks we could find and jamming them into each other's eyes. No, we are not friends, but we've stopped hitting each other with these sticks. So that's an improvement at the margin. Even though I don't think the deal is all that radical or all that different, the Chinese are going to buy a little bit more agriculture from us. That will be helpful, but frankly, probably not as much as they would have if we had never started this. And we are going to lower some of the tariffs, and we didn't put on the tariffs that we were going to put on in December. But frankly, two-thirds of the tariffs that were put in place almost 2 years ago now will remain in place for at least another 10 or 11 months. So on the trade pact, it's hopeful. It's improvement. We'll take it. But it's not radical change. The two largest economies in the world, the U.S. and China, are still not going to get along for a little while. We've, as I described to an audience a couple of weeks ago, I hate to use the analogy, it's a little bit like a divorce. You're not getting along with your wife, but you've really decided not to argue in front of the children. And in this case, the children is kind of the markets and the economy. So they're turning down the rhetoric. Not great, but it's improvement, and we'll take what we can get. The last topic, again, is the election. And I really want to be cautious here because what I really care about is I'll talk a little bit about kind of how we're handicapping it, but I really want to get to sort of the market implications. And let me start by being completely upfront. While discussions of the U.S. election will be all the rage in 2020, I would really caution you from doing much in your portfolio around this topic. If we really saw obvious trends, maybe we'd say, hey, this president or this administration would be better than that one. Maybe you should add more risk or take out risk, whatever. I don't see that right now for a whole bunch of different reasons. The first one is it's really early. And I know the election's only 10 months away, but there is still so much we don't know, in particular, who President Trump will even be running against. So before we even start handicapping it, President Trump could have a very good probability of beating some of the candidates, not so good of a probability against beating some other candidates. And seeing as we have no idea what the Democratic field is going to narrow down to, it's way too soon to start thinking about, quote, what this means for my portfolio. The second reason is that I think it could be really, really close again. And so we never want to make big bets in portfolios or big changes because we think something's going to happen, especially when it's a real razor-thin margin. People, I think, overestimate the size of President Trump's victory. President won by 70 electoral votes, but he won by, if you break it down, he won by 190,000 votes in four states, Pennsylvania, Florida, Wisconsin, and Michigan. 190,000 votes in those four states is less than 1% of the votes cast in those four states and about 1/10 of 1% of all the votes cast nationwide. The president's margin of victory was microscopic and could have gone either way if a million tiny little factors had changed. And all of those factors will still be in play. So if you look at the betting markets right now, the betting markets say it's about 50-50. A lot of people in our industry think President Trump has a little bit of an edge. I think it's really, really close, and I think it's a terrible way to think about your portfolio right now. The final one, after we have the election, and whoever gets elected, the Democrat, the Republican, whatever, I kind of disbelieve the greatest stories and the worst stories, kind of the worst-case scenarios or the best-case scenarios. The way it looks right now is that Congress is still pretty likely to be split. No guarantees, but it looks like the House is likely to stay in Democratic hands. No guarantee, but likely. And that the Senate is likely to stay in Republican hands. No guarantees, but more than likely. Which means whoever the president is going into January of 2021, there is still going to be a lot of sand in the gears of Washington. So the worst case scenarios about, a Democrat will get in and we're going to raise taxes and it'll be all this regulation will be terrible for the markets. I think that's the worst case scenario is not likely to play out. Or maybe President Trump will get elected and we'll get more tax cuts and more deregulation. I don't think the best case scenario plays out because, again, I don't think he'll have both houses of Congress. So without belaboring this point, while I do think the election will be all the talk of this year and it will probably add some volatility to your portfolio from time to time, at this point, maybe once we know who the Democrat is, maybe when we get through the summer and the conventions, maybe we can start talking about whether there are any real market implications. But right now, it's absolutely guessing and a terrible way to think about portfolio construction. So have fun talking politics, but I wouldn't be doing much in my portfolios around it now. With that, John, I've probably gone way too long, but happy to take questions if there are any.
No, that's really great. Appreciate your comments. One of the comments or one of the things that I'd just like your feedback on is we've gotten kind of a general consensus that S&P corporate earnings might be in the neighborhood of, say, 5, 6, 7% for 2020, and without multiple expansion, you could reasonably expect the market, therefore, to generate a 5, 6, 7% return and plus whatever dividends. Is that reasonable in your estimation, or what, you know, what would you see as far as corporate earnings out there?
Yeah, that's really close, John, to my thinking, but let me expand on it a little bit. So you're right. The consensus right now is for just over 9%. But remember, that always comes down as the year goes by. Analysts who make these estimates always a little bit too in love with their companies. The earnings are always a little bit too high. I should say almost always a bit too high. So when I've done the math, that 9% is going to come down closer to something. I think you said 6 to 7. I'm kind of in the 4, 5, 6 range. So pretty close to you, maybe a tad under, kind of that mid single digit type of earnings. Maybe you get a little PE expansion. I'm not expecting it, but maybe. And that does those two things. If you get stable PEs, 5 or 6% earnings growth, yeah, and then you get your dividend, which right now is just under 2%. I think it's 1.8, 1.9%. You end up with a 6, 7, 8% return. But to be clear, that's my base case. But that's the thing I think is most likely to happen. And we always think we should build our portfolios around our most likely case. So, hey, I dialed in. I heard some guy on the phone. He thinks the base case is up 6 or 7%. My bonds are giving me 2. Why don't I jump into equities? Well, you also have to look at your upside versus your downside. And it turns out that if we're wrong, I think there's more downside than there is upside because multiples are pretty high. PE ratios are pretty high. So this gets back to my point, John, about your base case, what you kind of that scenario you laid out is very close to the way I'm thinking about it, but I'm still a bit cautious because I don't like the upside versus downside. And this is why I said earlier, I think you want to be in markets, because I like this idea of, hey, maybe we get single-digit earnings growth, a little bit of a dividend, we'll have a decent year, maybe not a great year. But there's a little bit of hesitation in the back of my mind because I don't like the upside versus downside trade-off this late in the cycle at these prices. So, yeah, you want to be in markets, but because of the upside to downside trade-off, you don't want to stick your neck out too far. And, again, that simply links kind of what you described, which I completely agree with, to my earlier statement about, yeah, you want to be in markets, but not sticking your neck out too far.
Okay, so along those lines, beyond your base case, what would be maybe a positive catalyst that would improve some things, and then, or therefore, what would be a negative catalyst that could, you know, give you maybe a more significant downside risk exposure?
Yeah, a positive catalyst might be that we are underestimating earnings growth. Now, this doesn't happen all that often. As I mentioned before, usually when earnings come out at the beginning of the year, they usually fall by 4 to 5% on average, and typically somewhere between 3 and 7%. So if earnings are 10% at the beginning of the year, they typically come in closer to 4 or 5. That's kind of the math. But where's the upside? It turns out that earnings, other than the year of the tax cut, have been really, really flat for a long time. Earnings were not great in 15 and 16. We had a big sell-off in the oil markets. A lot of people refer to 2015 and 2016 as an earnings recession. In 17, they started to go up right after President Trump was elected. We had a lot of deregulation. And then in 18, we got the tax cut. And then in 19, as I mentioned earlier, earnings didn't do anything. So you've really only had one really good year of earnings in the last 3 to 4 years, and it was almost all because of the tax cut. So maybe, this is not my base case, but you asked about upside surprises. It might be that there's a little bit of pent-up earnings out there that the market isn't expecting. So maybe we do get better earnings than I'm thinking, because they've been pretty soft for a while, and markets tend to be mean reverting in the long run. So maybe we get a little bit more of a pop in earnings than I expect. A downside catalyst. China is always a wild card. I think China can really maintain and continue their gradual deceleration. Remember, China is slowing from about a 6.5% to 7% real GDP over the last 5 or 6 years. Down to the last 1 to 2 years, it's kind of closer to 6. They may dip under 6% this year. They might be 5.9. They might be 5.8. They might come in at 6 again. But China is clearly decelerating at a very slow rate, and they have a lot of tools to manage that deceleration. That's my base case. The downside is that I'm wrong, and the slowdown picks up speed in China. And if the slowdown picks up speed in China, that will affect all of Asia. It will affect global supply chains. It will affect Europe. We already saw that the recent slowdown has really caused some struggles in Germany, a major export country for China. And so it's not my base case, but China is always something. We know that China is slowing, and we expect it. And frankly, they need to slow down for a whole bunch of reasons I won't go into. They need to rebalance their economy between trade and capital expenditures and sort of rebalance that back to domestic consumption. That requires gradual slowing. But President Xi Jinping doesn't want that slowdown to get out of hand. He wants to slow, but he doesn't want to slow much. And we think he has the tools to manage the slowdown, and we hope we're right. But if we're wrong, that would be a real problem for markets. Again, not our base case, but always something I keep in the back of my mind. People always say, what keeps you up at night? That's one of the things that keeps me up at night, even though it's not my base view.
Well, that was great, Dave. Thank you very much. I don't think we're going to have any questions today, but we certainly do appreciate you being on the call and giving us the insights, and we really appreciate the partnership that we've had with Natixis and the various asset management companies within the Natixis brand, and appreciate the service and the partnership that we've had there. I'd like to thank any of our callers that did dial in today, and look forward to you joining us again next month for our third Thursday conference call on Thursday, February 20th. So, again, thanks, Dave, and appreciate you being on the call today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Take care.